Hi everyone and welcome to UKIS ITEL. And this week we have a special episode which is the recording of a live in-conversation event that I held a couple of days ago with Tracy Brabin, the Mayor of West Yorkshire. And during our chat we touched on levelling up, the state of the Labour Party and, crucially, whether she prefers Greggs or Pret. Have a listen and I hope you enjoy it. Wasting the nice weather by coming to an indoor event. My name's Arna Mennett. I'm head of an organisation called UK in a Changing Europe. And in case you didn't know, UK in a Changing Europe is a network of academics. And what we try and do is bring facts and evidence to public debate. So try and make sure that whatever your views are on anything, you've got some concrete information to base your decisions on. And the one thing we ask of you in return for the gallons of cheap wine we've provided for you this evening is go have a look at our website, sign up for our newsletter if you can. We're keen to do loads more stuff outside of London, so I'd be very keen to know if there's an appetite. I mean, particularly in this part of the world, because this is the part of the world I come from, but just, you know, people have said to us, oh, people won't turn up for stuff outside of London, you're wasting your time. And actually, I'd be just keen to know from you afterwards whether you think that's true or whether there is an appetite. But I don't really need to introduce Tracy to you lot in the room, I don't suppose. But for those watching online, this is Tracy Brabin, the elected mayor of West Yorkshire, formerly MP for Batley and Spen, and prior to that, a very successful actress and screenwriter. Tracy, thank you for doing this.
It's an absolute pleasure. Great to be here.
So, I mean, there are three or four sort of broad areas I want to cover. The first of which, I suppose, given your role as a Metro Mayor, is first, I suppose, what are Metro Mayors for?
If I can put it that way.
Yeah, well, my version of what a Metro Mayor is for is to be a champion for the region, to be a voice for the region. So as a commuter, for example, being able to be a champion and a voice for commuters when it came to TransPennine Express and how hopeless that service was, being able to bring people together, campaign to get change, but also to be a voice to Westminster and to ensure that we have a seat around the table. I've always thought devolution is a great thing because it brings power and money to those in the most pain. It brings them, it brings all of that nearer those people that need the most help.
Okay, I'll come back to that in a minute because I'm a bit sceptical about the money bit of that. But
we could always do with more.
I mean, we lots of people, myself included, spend a lot of time saying we need devolution. But I mean, devolution in England, in particular, is an absolute dog's dinner. It's patchy, it's messy, it's inconsistent. And when you go around West Yorkshire, do people get what your role is as opposed to their MP, as opposed to their local council? Do people understand who does what? Or do they blame people generally for everything?
Yeah, I do. I think it is, you know, for political geeks, everybody seems to understand mayors and devolution to some degree. But no, the public are on a journey. And, you know, I've only been the mayor for 2 years. And I'm sure Ken Livingstone and Andy Burnham had the same issue when they became mayors. You know, what's the point of a mayor? But for me, I think the mayor has a vision that is strategic. So, for example, you've got local council Leeds is really flourishing and, you know, investable propositions coming out of its you know, out of its ears. My job is to make sure that West Yorkshire is heard for investors and from government, and also to bring the opportunities for that combined effort. That's why it's been so brilliant to have five talented local authority leaders be able to come together, and we're about to launch our West Yorkshire Plan, which is our vision for 2040. And I think being in lockstep, five plus one and me, being able to deliver for our region is great. But certainly, people think I wear a mayoral chain. Mm-hmm. They think I have a car and a driver, which I don't. They think sometimes that do I do the refuse? It is hard to define because it is new and people are sort of getting their head around it. But I actually think there is a bit of an arms race at the moment. We've got Michael Gove, who's really bought into devolution. Mm-hmm. Is the rest of the government? Well, that's the jury's out. And also, you've seen with Gordon Brown's commission for a better Britain, a new Britain, Well, you know, there is a real appetite to release the sort of constraint of power from the centre, from Whitehall and Westminster, out to the regions. So I think it's a really exciting time because actually we can navigate it and create it to work for us. And also, let's not forget, if you ask a child to draw a mare, unless they're young and they watch Paw Patrol, they'll probably draw a male mare. And so I'm also navigating what the public think of what a mayor looks like as the only woman metro mayor in the country. There's 10. So we're all learning, but I think trying to say to the public, I think just basically I am your champion, I think the public get that.
Okay, I want to push you on a couple of things you said. I mean, firstly, I mean, it does strike me in my darker moments that actually the reason we have mayors is no one was willing to give local government proper powers, proper financing, and this was a kind of, oh, let's stick some mayors in there and think about it.
But no, it's not that, because a council leader has their region with a boundary, mm-hmm. whereas I think a mayor has a much more strategic position. So 2.4 million people live in West Yorkshire, but I am able to, as mayor, work collectively with other mayors, so we've got much more heft. I mean, 10 mayors, we represent 22 million people. Mm-hmm. I don't think government would have, and it was the right decision, to take the contract, a new contract, away from what was a failing company, TransPennine Express. But that was, I think, because of the power of the mayors of Steve Rotherham, Andy Burnham, myself, and Oliver Coppard, all mm-hmm. together, saying this impacts all of us, and we represent so many millions of people. You've got to make the right decision. So I think the mayors do have a role that is significant because it's strategic.
I mean, cynically, if I was Minister for Local Government, I'd say that. I'd say, look, it's all very well having these local politicians, but actually you need someone to take a strategic view, the interest of the country as a whole. I've got a far bigger budget. So the danger with that is you're taking things away. I mean, in a sense, creating metro mayors moves some powers away from the people that they were being exercised in the name of, where you could have actually just empowered more local government. Do you see what I mean? That the argument for bringing things closer to the people.
Well, you can empower local governments, and actually the erosion of funding of local government has actually created so many of the problems that mayors are being brought in to solve, which is, you know, Kirklees, for example, 60% of its budget has been cut since 2010. So no wonder we have a plethora of, you know, bed banks, baby banks, food banks, because that safety net that used to be your local council, your local authority, is now provided by charities, and they are now threadbare because of the energy crisis and inflation and so on. So actually everybody is hanging by a thread. So you can't have just only devolution, which is welcome. You have to also fund local authorities properly and to give them the money that they need in order to, you know, do the basics, if nothing else. But being able to work with our partners collectively, we can team and ladle resources between the regions to have a stronger, more united West Yorkshire.
Okay, I mean, the other thing that strikes me about what you said is you seem to believe national politicians in terms of what they say about devolution. Do you really think Labour come into power, say, hypothetically, we'll come back to the Labour Party later on, you're out of power for a long, long time. Do you really think the first thing they're going to do is start giving power away? Do you take them at their word on devolution?
Well, do you know what? I actually do, because I think there is a sense in the Labour Party now that they have to be transformative and a game changer. And certainly the work that went on in Gordon's commission and the way that Keir got behind that, I think, was reassuring. Of course, I will hold them to account for what they've said. And it will be a challenge when you've been out of power for so long, in 13 years, and now you have money and power. But I think fundamentally, Keir, Gordon, Rachel, Lisa, Nandi, they understand that the only way you grow an economy is by empowering those who are the ones that can make, you know, you can get a better bang for your buck if you give the money and the power to people who understand the community. So, for example, giving our region a whole wadge of cash for Multiply, which is to get people more numerate, very difficult to deliver when we have learners who are so far of even walking in a classroom. Where is that extra funding going to come from? We could do so much more with that money if you gave it directly to us. And that's why I've been really challenging government that we are next in line for the trailblazer, because that single settlement, that is the game changer. Now, I don't see any world in which a Labour Party are going to roll back on trailblazers.
Okay.
They're going, that single settlement that comes from Treasury, the way that you know, that you can deliver much more with that budget in control of your own destiny, it makes sense for growth for the whole of the UK.
Okay. I mean, the other issue that's in the news at the moment when it comes to local government is, I suppose, accountability. You know, the, all sorts of stuff going on and all sorts of rumours around Teesside at the moment, which I don't want you to comment on specifically. But one of the questions there has been, you know, the rather weird situation that it takes the Prime Minister to ask the National Audit Office to look into what's going on. Do you think we need stronger accountability mechanisms for Metro mayors?
Well, my pitch to government, you give us a single settlement and we will be completely accountable to the government. Now, in West Yorkshire, we're quite unique that we have a combined authority that is cross-party. So we have scrutiny and those cross-party members read all the papers, they're in all the private discussions, they get briefings in the same way I do. We also have, unusually, three scrutiny panels that are elected councillors, cross-party, that are there to hold me to account. And there's a number of meetings I have to attend to be challenged. But of course, there's I'm open for absolute scrutiny. But I would say it also comes both sides. So when you when the Towns Fund, for example, or when government's making decisions about which funding pots to give where, it would be helpful if scrutiny was challenged on the other on the other side of the fence as well, that we had an opportunity to say, hang on a minute, what was the algorithm that made you decide to give it to your friends and rather than the people who potentially needed that money? So absolutely 100% open to further, deeper, wider scrutiny. This is public money. And I hope that the people of West Yorkshire would see that the way I operate is absolute transparency.
And what do you make of the idea that was floated recently? I mean, I thought it was a bit wacky, to be honest, but anyway, that one form of accountability is for the Metro mayors to appear before select committees.
Well, it's something to discuss. And there's also been floated a grand committee of MPs. I'm not sure whether that would work because you could be potentially territorial and a bit party political. But, you know, there's lots of ways to do it. And, I you know, I think there is a real appetite within the M10 to be open to scrutiny because we understand transparency builds trust. And the problem with politics is that the public have lost trust with politicians. And that's why you mentioned I was the MP for Batley and Spen. And honestly, it's such a different job being a mayor. Okay. And there is a different level of trust with a mayor as a campaigner, an advocate and a champion over and above an MP. I mean, the death threats, the hate, it was really challenging. But as a mayor, I mean, old men want to kiss my hand and young people want to take selfies. It's a very different world being a mayor.
I've got to ask you on the back. I mean, is there anything you miss about being an MP? And in particular, I suppose, if Labour do win the next election, I mean, you were a frontbencher, you could have been a cabinet minister. Would there be a bit of you that thinks, God, I wish I'd hung around for that?
Honestly, this is the best job in politics.
Right.
It's the best job. And to just reflect on my time as an MP for 5 years, I mean, I never anticipated going into politics. It was such an extraordinary privilege. It was a real gift every day. I loved it. And some great colleagues that I miss. But I was in opposition. And being in opposition is rubbish because I could see the challenges in Batley and Spen. And there was very little I could do about it. Whereas, as mayor, cost of living crisis, immediately, in a matter of weeks, £3 million given to local authorities for warmth, food and support with mental health. I mean, just imagine being able to do that as an MP. You have to be in government to do that. And also, I'm not sure you can react as swiftly. I mean, obviously, COVID, there was, you know, a really swift reaction where people came together, trade unions, government. They knew the crisis needed a very fast reaction. But it is an incredible job. And I would encourage people to think about stepping up, and particularly women. It's a great job. And there are lots of talented councillors that would do a fantastic job as mayor. Certainly there's new devolution deals coming through as well.
One of the interesting things about the Metro Mayors is you've obviously made a real effort to work together and do combined initiatives. Does that come easily to all of you? I mean, does that take a load of effort and coordination, or is it something that?
Yeah, it needs coordination, and it needs projects we identify that we've got a common endeavour, but it feels the least party political. Mm-hmm. Role I've ever played being a mayor, because, for example, Andy Street nominated me as chair of the M10. We really have the same issues around skills, around housing, around funding for growth, for investment in businesses, you know, all of those things, tackling the energy crisis, the cost of living crisis, so much common, endeavour. But it needs organising, it needs coordinating, identifying those common purposes. And currently it's the M10, and it may be different again when it's the M15. You know, soon it might be the M25, who knows?
Stop working when it's the M25.
I don't know. I think it's a really exciting place to be. And it's been very interesting recruiting to join our organisation.
Yeah.
Lots of people... A fair number of people who have worked in politics in London, in government, coming to work for West Yorkshire MCA, because this is where a lot of the action is. So, and okay. You get to work with other mayors as well. So it is, it's a good job.
One of the things
that's the end of the advert for working for West Yorkshire Combined Authority.
I mean, one of the things that intrigues me, and I'm a politics nerd, so it's not necessarily intriguing.
I love nerds.
It's just there's a weird cross-cuttingness about politics, isn't there? You're in power. Labour nationally aren't in power. You work with people like Andy Street. Does that ever put you, and you want to work closely with Michael Gove, who holds the purse strings for a lot of the things you want to do. Does that ever put you at loggerheads? Do you ever get a phone call from Lisa and Andy saying, Tracy, will you stop being so bloody positive about Michael Gove, please? You know what I mean? You've got different agendas.
Different job. I think people understand I have a different job to do.
Yeah.
I'm not a shadow front bencher.
No.
My job is to deliver for the people of West Yorkshire. And, I need to develop relationships with government and relationships with colleagues with the same challenges. And also, I can learn from others as well. So to be closed down would be foolish. And wouldn't get me what I need, which is, better outcomes.
So there's never been tension with the Labour leadership or the leader's office about...
No. In fact, they want me to succeed. I'm the only woman Metro Mayor. I mean, it would be a bit mad, wouldn't it, if they were like, oh, Tracy, don't do this, don't do that. I think they really, really want me to succeed. They want mayors to succeed. Because remember, I'm Labour in power. So it's a rehearsal for a Labour government. So I can say to the public... This is what you'll get, then some, with, imagine, Labour councillors, Labour MPs, Labour council leaders, a Labour mayor and a Labour government. Can you imagine coming together what we can achieve for this country with those common values about why we're doing it?
And there's no danger that, we have a government that talks a lot about levelling up, say, that if some of those red wall towns start to flourish, it's Michael Gove and Rishi Sunak who claim the credit for that. So, one of the difficulties about being in opposition is you don't want your country to fail, but you kind of want the government to. And there's quite a blurred line between the two. I'm just trying to push you on this, that actually,
yeah.
If you succeed too much, it makes the government look good, doesn't it? I mean, there must be some sort of misaligned incentives between you and the Labour Party that must come out at some points.
Well, I'm really, really going to challenge that, because there is not a space or a place where the Labour government, Labour Party would say to me, Tracy, can you stop being a champion for your region? Because they understand I have a different job, and that is standing side by side with Michael Gove when we get a trailblazer deal of £1 billion for West Yorkshire, of course, I'm going to champion that, and I'm going to thank Michael Gove for understanding what devolution means. And I have publicly said I am grateful to Hugh Merriman and to Mark Harper for listening to the people of the North and understanding that to give a failing, you know, rail company a new contract would be a betrayal of the North. And they listened, and I'm going to thank them for that. That doesn't mean I'm not going to stop challenging them. And also, you know, hopefully leading the charge for an incoming Labour government.
OK, well, I tried. You won on that one. Now, each Metro Mayor's got their own unique devolution deal. Are there things that other Metro Mayors can do that you wish you could do? Are there things that you wish, oh, I wish I had a bit of that?
Yeah, I mean, I really would like more control over skills post-16, and that is in the trailblazer deals that both Andy Street and Andy Burnham have negotiated. Mm-hmm. Andy Burnham has health. Both Andy Burnham and myself are police and crime commissioners. Andy Street is not a police and crime commissioner, and neither is Oliver Coppard. I would say that the combination of mayor and police and crime commissioner is a fantastic combination. Mm. And if I was looking to become a mayor, I would absolutely now say I want to be PCC as well. Because being able to, for example, talk about a priority of safety of women and girls, mm-hmm. I also have control over funding for some funding for the buses through the bus service improvement plan. So we've created a bus safety app that lets people tell me when they feel unsafe on the bus. Then I've found money for 15 PCSOs to be on the bus network in the same way you have transport police on trains. Mm-hmm. Being able to say, we have a shortage of bus drivers, that's why our bus network's not working. I can run a campaign for recruitment. I can also spend money on training bus drivers. So there's a real team and ladling that goes on, and particularly around safety, safer communities, being able to use the Mayor's Safer Communities Fund, which is over £1 million, mm-hmm. pounds, to invest in programmes in the community. It's up to £8,000 per programme on the things that chime with my priorities. So that is definitely a really positive additional power that I think most mayors will find that they want. But for myself, I haven't pushed for health. But what I do understand is that health inequalities is too wide in West Yorkshire. So if we're going to do levelling up, let's do our own levelling up as well, that a child born today in Ilkley will live a healthier life 10 years longer than a child born in Batley, say. So we've got to deal with that, which is why I'm really pleased we've just appointed our first ever inclusivity champion, Fatima Khan Shah, who is paid for by the Integrated Care Board and me, and she straddles health and my morality. So together we are tackling health inequality through programs and innovations. So there's loads of creative problem solving that you can do by crossing those sectors.
And you mentioned the word creative, because one of the striking things about your tenure has been how you've pushed for support for the creative industries. And you've talked about, I think, a creative new deal. And I was sort of wondering whether that's just a throwback to your old life and just a personal interest, or whether you genuinely think there's something there that can help drive the region forward. I mean, what contribution would a creative new deal make for West Yorkshire?
Well, it would be a game changer. And I think it's not just me saying that. It's the sector itself. It's the data. I mean, creative industries are worth £2 billion to our economy in West Yorkshire. Tens of thousands of people are employed in this sector. But if you're going to find growth in an economy that's stagnant, you have to find a sector that's already growing and you can invest in it and it will grow faster. Now, internationally, our soft power is focused on the creative industries. We have a unique moment in West Yorkshire, not just Channel 4, not just Production Park, where Beyoncé rehearsed her recent show, and Lady Gaga.
Let's just pause
visits.
There. Beyoncé was in Wakefield.
I know. And, right. and Lady
that
Gaga.
That is not a joke. That is
stars.
A fact.
We have the unique sort of coming together, the agglomeration of Leeds 2023, a year of culture, and Kirklees Year of Culture in Huddersfield, mm-hmm. which is music, and then Wakefield 2024 Year of Culture, Culturedale in Halifax Year of Culture, followed by the mighty Bradford City of Culture. And that will bring millions of pounds of investment. We can use that to turbocharge our creative offer. So that's why, for example, the Mayor's Screen Diversity Programme, the sector tells us that we film here, but we have to bring talent and skilled workforce from London because we can't find talent. So I can intervene in this sector by making sure that not only are we training up young people, but we're also looking at an inclusive economy by making sure that those young people come from disadvantaged backgrounds, working class kids, kids of colour, mm-hmm. kids with a disability. And the outcomes are spectacular when you take those really hyper-focused interventions. So the last cohort of the Mayor's Screen Diversity Programme, run by Screen Yorkshire, 50% went into jobs in film and TV, 43% of that cohort had a disability. Now, there is no way that you'd get that data and those outcomes without those sorts of interventions. So Creative New Deal that is culture for all, which means that wherever you live, you can have a creative life. Now, the economic argument is really powerful because people choose somewhere to live for its cultural and creative offer over and above good schools. Mm-hmm. And the agglomeration of a creative offer, a cultural offer, is where people choose to live. And that's why I think why Leeds in particular has one of the highest retentions of students, university students and graduates in the country because of its creative offer. Now, my job as mayor is to make sure that the whole of West Yorkshire can flourish. And that's why tomorrow we're hosting Andy Haldane, who is the chair of the Royal Society of the Arts, Tim Davey, head of the BBC, and lots of others who are top of their field, Professor Katie Shaw, who's just done a great piece of work on this, to prove that culture levels up, and we're going to prove it, we've got with the data, but also think of a northern cultural corridor that stretches from Liverpool to, through Manchester, through us, down south, South Yorkshire. Just think of the power, right up to Northumbria, mm-hmm. the power of that. In West Yorkshire. And what happens is people join you, people cluster. Channel 4 has proven that this is where the action is, this is where the commissioning is, so this is where companies start to come.
But would you accept that this is a bit of a Wakefield question, I suppose, that there's a danger that this can be a bit tokenistic, like critics of the Hepworth, for instance, will say it's all very well that we've created the Hepworth and people stop off on the M1 on their way up somewhere else. And
No, because you wouldn't get Tyler Yard North if you didn't have the Hepworth. Mm-hmm. And for those that don't know, and if you've been to King's Cross, you'll have seen that all that renovation around King's Cross, the railway station, that was Tile Yard. And Tile Yard North are investing millions in renovating huge heritage buildings dead opposite the garden of the Hepworth, mm-hmm. where there's going to be a 5-star hotel. But fundamentally more important for that is that there's going to be music studios for fledgling music companies, music musicians, film composers. They're renting out those spaces. They're doing an amazing job. And then you've got Kappa College, which is like our Brit school for young musical theatre youngsters from working class backgrounds, and the college and Production Park. And Production Park have got a backstage academy, which is basically runs alongside the rehearsal space for these big venues, shows like Beyoncé's. 100% employment, those young kids. And now Backstage Academy are running something similar at the Peace Hall with Live Nation, who are doing all the music events over the summer. Mm-hmm. So I absolutely think the Hepworth has changed the game for Wakefield. Okay. And it's one of the biggest, most important galleries in Europe. And we have international artists coming and opening their shows there.
Okay. You've just launched your climate and environment action plan for net zero in Yorkshire. One of my great bugbears, if you read the London papers, is they're full of stories about how the Oiks up north don't believe in the climate crisis. They want to dig and burn coal as much as possible. Is there popular support for that, for your plan here?
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe we could take a straw poll from the audience.
It's a representative audience.
My inbox is full of people who really care about this.
Yeah, because
I really care about it because when we spoke earlier about levelling up, you cannot level up without tackling the climate emergency. Because if you are a business in Hebden Bridge and your business is washed away every 3 years, and then you're thinking of relocating because you just can't continue. How do you have a thriving economy? It's really important. That's why we've allocated 40 million to that climate and environment plan, because we've got to get on with it. And that's about retrofitting homes. That's about a better bus network so people can choose not to use their car, because its car emissions are really stubborn in West Yorkshire because we don't have that London-style integrated transport plan. That's why mass transit is really, really important, because we've got to get people out of their cars and onto trams, onto electric bikes. That's why we're launching the electric bike scheme outside Leeds City Station very soon. All of these initiatives are really, really going to hopefully tackle the climate emergency, because we've committed to hitting net zero by 2038, which is years ahead of government. Mm. And I've always said, you know, mayors can help government get into the right place by delivering in our communities, because we know them. So help us. And at the moment, Alan, it's so mad, we're having to bid for EV money for EV charging points. I mean, isn't that just the maddest thing? When we know where they should be, we know which communities need them the most, we know where we can build a need for them, give us the money to deliver them, rather than having to go into a beauty contest to ask government for it. So, you know, we're on with it. I know that the people of West Yorkshire think it's important to them. But for those families that are often really challenged with other priorities, like putting food on the table, The energy crisis has been a moment where we could tell a different story as well, which is, if you talk to us about insulation or retrofitting your home, you will have lower bills. And we've been able to do that with businesses. So we've had £10 million that's been part of a scheme where businesses can green their processes, which saves them money on their energy costs. So we've got a different narrative, which is more immediate, but fundamentally, we've got to hit those targets.
Okay, I'm a bit of a conscientious objector to electric bikes, I have to say.
Well, there's no way anybody can get about West Yorkshire without topography, unless you're, I don't know, thighs of steel.
I've said my other half's got an electric bike, and I dread going out now, because whenever we go out for dinner or something, I turn up out of breath and sweating and just like feeling like I'm going to die. And she's totally fresh because basically the bike's done all the work. And
well,
I just think it's
get an electric bike, go with the flow.
I don't know. And just one other thing, we're sitting here in Leeds, in a beautiful bit of Leeds that's being, I mean, whenever you come to Leeds, there's bits that have been redeveloped. I mean, between my trips, things get built. And in a set, broadly speaking, there are two conflicting views about how you drive economic development in a region. One is that the view that says you create a successful city and the rest will follow. And the other, which sort of sees that as being far too city-focused. You talk to a lot of people in Wakefield and they'll look at Leeds with a slight degree of resentment, saying Wakefield, Leeds sucks up all the resources, it gets everything. Broadly speaking, do you see cities as crucial, or do you think it's more complicated than that?
Well, cities, of course, are important. And Leeds is, you know, is a core city. It's a national city and something we should absolutely celebrate. But that's where the mayors come in, because without a mayor, you could feel Leeds is going to get everything from government. Because to be honest, the majority of people in Whitehall, when you talk about, you know, the North or Yorkshire, they only know Leeds.
Yeah.
So having a mayor means that the priorities of the whole region are addressed. Mm-hmm. And it won't work at all if Leeds thrives and the rest of the region doesn't, because we're polycentric. It's not like Manchester, it's not like London, where all the energy and resources go into a centre. We've all individual identities, and that sense of place needs to flourish and needs to be supported, and the ambitions of regions need to be financially supported as well. So that's why there's many millions of investment goes into Wakefield and into Huddersfield and Bradford and so on. So because we must all rise together. But of course, you know, when people come to Leeds, they go, God, Leeds is incredible. I came here in the 70s. It was nothing like this. It's amazing. But there are areas of Leeds that are also as communities as poor and as challenged as communities in Bradford or Kirklees. So, you know, the initiatives that we've got to tackle poverty impact on everybody, because everybody's got to have the same opportunities. But also, as mayor, the economic focus being on skills, for example, and transport helps all of us, because we need to thicken that the economy by making sure that people have access to skills and access to jobs and also are able to get about between those opportunities.
I mean, happily, Ellen Road looks exactly like it did in the 1970s. So you've talked a lot about
sad
transport.
Sad faces, though. Sad faces.
It's a bit too soon to be joking about it, actually. Yeah. But would you like to have the powers that Sadiq Khan has over transport? You talked about transport a lot, and there's one obvious area where...
I mean, obviously, Sadiq has a different role in being the mayor of the capital. But what I do want is I would love his fare box, because he's got the tube, and the tube then supports the buses, and he's got a fantastic, integrated, ambitious, you know, transport network that delivers for the people of London. And so that's why mass transit is important. That's why we've taken the next step, and that the work that we've done has proved that franchising is our preferred option for the buses. So, you know, we're on our way, but of course they're further ahead than us.
Yeah, and actually what London shows is if you have a good integrated public transport system, you can do things like an ultra-low emission zone for all the protests.
Well, we have one in Bradford
If a Labour government comes in at the next election, what should they do about HS2?
Build it. Well, they've already committed to it. And Rachel and Keir, they both came to Bradford and have said that they're committed to Northern Powerhouse Rail in full, which is a new line between Manchester and Leeds with a through station in Bradford, and committed to HS2. Because just, you know, we're stalling without that interconnectivity, because it isn't just about fast trains to London. And that's what, you know, people in London like to think it is. It's about interconnectivity between our regions. Because if there's a fast train, it's not stopping at stations. So you need both. You need the stoppers, you need the fast trains. And also you need an opportunity to get freight off the road and onto the rails. And with that competitive market, how do you do that? So I'm really delighted that they're behind it. Because just imagine the way that Biden has done it in America. You know, these big infrastructure projects, the North hasn't had them for decades. Mm. Now is the chance for Labour to actually be a game changer for the North. And it sounds like, you know, they're committed to doing that. All those jobs, just think about that.
No, I mean, one of my concerns about politics, just politics in general, nationally, I don't know if you share this, is it just seems to have become a lot more short-termist. So something like HS2 is a project over decades. Mm. And the temptation in politics at the moment seems to be, give me some ideas that I can deliver on in the next 3 years in time for the next election. Do you think even a Labour government, particularly a Labour government with a relatively small majority, would really invest in the future in that way? Or is there something structural about our politics that makes it too difficult?
I think when Keir spoke at the launch of the commission at Nexus, he spoke to this exact point, and he said, we're in this for the long term. And that's why my mission is to get every single government, whichever iteration, bought into mass transit, because this is a decade-long project. Mm. So believing in those big infrastructure projects is how we grow this country and, you know, how we recover from the worst 13 years.
I want to talk briefly about national politics, about the Labour Party, about what's going on. I mean, let's start with the region. I mean, in some ways, the Tories didn't do as badly in West Yorkshire as some people expected them to. I mean, they gained in Colne Valley. They didn't lose councillors in Calderdale and Kirklees. Mm. Is West Yorkshire still very much a battleground region, do you think?
Well, I mean, nobody would take votes for granted. I think that the national picture was reflected locally in the last few elections where traditional Labour voters potentially voted independent. So there's the rise of the independent candidate in West Yorkshire. And that sort of gave those voters then the confidence to then not, you know, to then lend their vote to Conservatives. Mm-hmm. I think coming back to, you know, getting rid of a fair number of independents rather than Conservatives has been the nuance of the change. And Kirklees was not in overall control. There's been a stability there now. Mm-hmm. I mean, I live in Colne Valley, so it was a very annoying for me. So it's a bit personal. But I think we are, you know, things are changing. But gosh, let's not forget the drubbing of 2019 and, you know, just the journey that we're on to build that confidence.
And also, I suppose the fact, I mean, it could have been far, far worse, couldn't it? Because people like Yvette Cooper, Ed Miliband essentially owe their success in 2019 to Nigel Farage. Because
I wouldn't say that. And if Yvette was in the room, she would completely disagree. Yeah. Only because I've been out with Yvette and she's one of the most fantastic campaigners I've ever met. Every weekend she's outdoor knocking. She's having those conversations. She earned every single vote. And the same is true of Ed as well. And his vision, you know, for his patch, his focus, you know, on green jobs, on a future that is better for the, you know, the people he represents. And, you know, times have changed. Mm-hmm. Those big stonking majorities, mm-hmm. I don't think we'll get back to those anytime soon. There will be more ebb and flow. But I think, you know, they deserve those wins, no doubt about it.
So the fact remains that the Brexit Party's vote was bigger than their majorities.
Well, of course, you know, of course, those numbers don't lie. But I would say, had they been campaigners who, not as talented or as effective, they would have lost their seat. But, I mean, you know, I do see what you're saying. And, you know, Dewsbury next door to me, I you know, my majority was slashed from 9,000 to 2.5. And there was an independent. And, you know, there was a bit of, you know, switched allegiances. But I think those times are behind us. And certainly when, you know, you've got Nigel Farage saying Brexit has failed, I think that was a moment in time.
Yeah.
And they hung on. But I do think, you know, we're going to have to earn every vote. There's no doubt about it.
I mean, you said a minute ago, no one takes votes for granted. Isn't that exactly what Labour did in this part of the country for too long? I'm not talking about now, but wasn't there... I mean, there was something about West Yorkshire to me that felt a bit like Scotland before the SNP surge. That is to say, you know, Yorkshire, Labour, take it for granted. We don't need to put too much effort in. Yeah. We know we're going to... Was there a sort of hubris about Labour's attitude?
Well, I mean, I've come into politics 7 years ago, so I'm not quite sure. All I can say is from my own point of view, Batley and Spen, where I fought for every single vote, there was no sense that, oh, I have a community where they believe that Labour is their voice, so they're going to vote for me. No. Mm-hmm. And you saw in the by-election that those allegiances had definitely shifted. And maybe in the past, maybe there was a bit of carving up, and probably the same would be true of Conservatives, where they would say, you know, Jacob Rees-Mogg might potentially say, you know, Somerset is always Conservative. Well, that's not true anymore. Mm. You know, there's going to be challenges in what could potentially be traditionally safe Conservative seats, now absolutely under attack by the Lib Dems.
Yeah.
So, you know, things have changed and people potentially don't feel the same historic allegiances because of the change in the workplace and so on.
And even though it might not be good for the parties, it's probably good for the place, isn't it? I remember at the time of the by-election, a schoolmate of mine saying the best thing Wakefield ever did was become marginal. Because actually, for the first time ever, people care. I mean, you know, if all seats were marginal, then everyone would get attention. But actually,
fantastic MP in Simon.
No, absolutely. But what I'm saying, though, is having these natural majorities, as you used to think about
people,
them, just means you can overlook the place.
Yeah. They would get lazy, whatever side of the aisle you're on.
Yeah. Now, in national terms, we've seen some evidence of the polls tightening. I mean, a little bit. Labour are still ahead, but their lead isn't as big as it was. Do you think there's a danger that the National Party kind of peaked too soon, that the election... It would have been better had the election been at the peak, and that they're running out of momentum a bit?
No. I think they're preparing for the battle ahead. And
you've been very good in this. I mean, you've been very loyal. I like this.
I'm not being loyal. It is the truth because, you know, when you say, you know, that the polls are tightening, the only poll that counts is the public. Mm-hmm. You know, that is the deciding factor. And whilst Rishi Sunak has not tanked the economy or is a buffoon and a liar, he's the best of a conservative bad job. So maybe there is that, well, you know, he's not as bad as others. And, we have got to get to that point where we're heading into an election where you get that clarity and that drive and that motivation that drives you to an election. But... about peaking too soon, I'm not sure anybody in the Labour Party takes it for granted, or even, to be frank, believes the polls, because they're forever changing. Mm-hmm. And it depends who you listen to.
Now, loads of parts of Yorkshire voted Leave in 2016. Do you think Keir Starmer has... Well... There's several bits to this question, I suppose. Firstly, do you think Leave voters have been reassured by how Keir Starmer has approached the issue of Brexit? Because some were sort of worried that he would be a sort of Remainer rejoiner. And do you think that policy has been the right one?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because there's been a fair bit of noise that actually he, in taking the position that he's taken, which is, look, we're not going backwards. We've got to look to the future. We've got to look at a better relationship with Europe. Is a failure for one group of people that actually, you know, why isn't he using this as an opportunity to make the case to rejoin the EU? Mm-hmm. I mean, I absolutely have the scars on my back from the referendum in Batley and Spen. It was absolutely horrendous. It was so divisive, mm-hmm, and painful. And the idea that we're going to go back to that, I don't think would be helpful. So looking to a future where we negotiate a better relationship with Europe. I mean, as mayor, I am representing my businesses who are telling me they are struggling, particularly with imports and exports. And I will do all I can to make sure we have a better relationship with Europe. But let's not forget, 2025 is going to be renegotiated anyway. So there will be that opportunity to have to look at it again, because we definitely have to find a way to have a relationship that works for the businesses that I represent that come to me with challenges about how we make sure that our nearest trading partner, that relationship is easier.
What do you mean by a better relationship with you? I mean, can you be a bit more specific?
Yeah, because certainly, you know, the paperwork, the obstacles that the businesses in West Yorkshire are facing, there has to be a better way to do it. And those conversations, when it's renegotiated, could be back in for discussion. It has got to be better. It's got to be easier because, you know, let's not forget, it's next door. We want to have businesses being able to trade with our nearest partner. Obviously, there's opportunities. I was on a trade mission to India recently. You know, we came back with a great win with 1,000 jobs, mm-hmm, from a company called Emphasis. And investment for West Yorkshire, that's fantastic. But also, you know, European companies, making sure that they get a soft landing if and when they want to invest. And I think there is an opportunity as a mayor to have those relationships. And it's interesting talking to investors and government representatives in India, and they were saying we're working with mayors and not central government. Mm-hmm. And that is true of mayors. You know, there's a network of mayors. We talk to each other about how we introduce businesses and how we can make it easier for universities to share students and mm-hmm. so on. You know, I think there is a way to have a good relationship with Europe. I mean, and that's going to be up for renegotiation, isn't it?
But just when you're around and about talking to voters, do you get the impression that people have changed, that like Leave voters have changed their minds, that people are thinking, oh, hang on a sec?
Well, I think there's been some data.
Yeah, but just in your interactions with people, do you hear this?
I think people feel, basically all the pain and the suffering that we went through in our family, and for those in the audience that had family members who disagreed, it was horrendous because it became so personal that they felt that for all of that, are we any better off? And the question is, are we better off with 13 years of Conservative government? No. They led on this. They potentially could have seen the pitfalls. Were we told the truth? No. Didn't people make the decisions based on what they thought was the truth? Yes. So there are people who are questioning that decision. But do they want to go back to that divisive moment? Probably not. They want to make the best of it. And, you know, they really are worried about heating and eating. That challenge for their kids, the future, is it brighter? Well, my role as mayor is to have a better, brighter West Yorkshire that works for all. And, you know, I will work with anybody from anywhere to do that.
So, and I'm sorry to bang on about this, but just to try and get to so if I were to say to you, actually, the best way to deal with the economics of Brexit is to join the single market, which you don't need a referendum for. Mm. You don't need to have that debate, but you do have to accept freedom of movement. You have to accept EU rules. Would you like to see Labour going more in that sort of direction if it was going to have real economic benefits?
Well, look, it's not in my gift and it's not about to happen imminently.
No, but you can have an opinion.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I'm a Remainer. I voted Remain. It did seem like an act of self-harm. However, as a representative for my community, as an MP, my job was to try and make it work. And there is no space, there is no world in which I want to go backwards. The country has made that decision and we have to make it work and we have to do what we can. And, you know, to say to a Labour government, a Labour government will come in and look at what needs to be done in order to ease those blockages at the ports, to ease, you know, to open up markets. Well, they will make those decisions. And, you know, I have every faith in mm-hmm. Rachel and Keir that they will, you know, they will do absolutely what's in their gift.
Okay, and just, I mean, the other big issue that's been the subject of conversation a lot in the last couple of weeks is immigration. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of mixed evidence about immigration. I mean, numbers have gone up, that's not mixed. But actually, if you look at national opinion polls, the British people don't care as much about immigration, anywhere near as much as they did in 2016. And yet, you hear a lot of concern about it in the Conservative Party. Is this something that people raise with you, concerns about immigration levels?
Not in the same way, but remember, my role is different.
Yeah.
What I am hearing from businesses is they can't get the skilled workforce.
Yeah.
That is an absolute challenge. Mm-hmm. And when your elderly parent isn't getting the care they need because that care home can't recruit, then people are thinking, what's gone wrong? That's why what's really important for me, and that's why I've been pushing for a trailblazer deal, is to have more power over skills. Mm-hmm. So we can upskill our workforce. We can run training programs where there are gaps in the market. Now, I can, with a limited degree, say to an inward investor, tell me what skills you're looking for, and we can have boot camps, we can pay for training courses that are bespoke for you to ensure you have that skill, that pipeline of skilled workforce. But to have more powers, just imagine what we could do. And we could make sure that those skilled workforce gaps are plugged. So we can, you know, support businesses to flourish and ensure that where it's also low paid, where I can intervene is I can, like, we're about to launch our Fair Work Charter, which uh-huh. is bringing businesses in to the family that will pay the real living wage, to make sure that we've widened our free skills training, our free education training, not to the minimum wage, but to the real living wage. So 2,000 more learners have got free training. So I'm doing what I can to increase the skilled workforce, supporting universities where I can mm-hmm. With their relationships with other universities around the world, but also, you know, locally businesses to try and, you know, help them get the workforce that they need.
I mean, isn't there a slight dishonesty about this debate about, I mean, the government says, you know, we're going to build up skills, and at the same time says to businesses, if you're struggling to attract a workforce, pay more. And yet perhaps the biggest area where we're dependent on immigrant labour is social care, where essentially yeah. it's up to government, isn't it? And isn't the ultimate problem with social care, we pay a pittance for jobs that are both high skill and high stress. And, you know, personally, if a job at a supermarket paid the same, it's an easier life, isn't it? Isn't mm-hmm. Don't we just need to pay more in the social care sector?
Absolutely. And that's why initiatives like this, a social care cooperative.
Yeah.
In Leeds, there's another one as well in Liverpool, where they cut out the middle person for the agency, and yeah. the money is then put back into the pockets of the worker. We've got to find other ways to do it. There's no doubt about it that is a really pivotal job for so many older people, and if we don't give it the respect that it deserves by paying properly, then we will really have a crisis in social care. And that's why there has been the campaign for social care to be, you know, woven into the NHS. Mm. And why are we insisting that people have to pay eye-watering amounts for social care when it's something that is a necessity for so many people that is inevitable? In the same way schools are paid for out of the public purse, there is that argument, isn't there? That NHS should bring social care under it into.
No, absolutely. But I suppose there are two. Sorry, I've gone wildly off script. It's anyway, right. Let's leave that to one side. I mean, there are two questions that occur to me out of that about social care. I mean, the first is, do you think we're in danger of forgetting the lessons the pandemic taught us? Like, I don't know if it's just me, but you think back to the pandemic when we were talking about how great key workers were. We were, you know, applauding on a Thursday night, doing all that sort of stuff. And actually, we've forgotten that now. And we haven't actually drawn the policy lessons of that, which is actually key workers need to be paid enough that we can actually fill those jobs and give them decent conditions. Then actually, we need to have a decently funded. And I'm hideously naive on occasion. I felt during and immediately after the pandemic, this is good in the sense that we're going to learn to do things better. And a couple of years on, I wonder whether those lessons have just been forgotten.
Well, it's a perfect analysis. And certainly the idea that nurses, who were the heroes and heroines, have gone on strike under this, you know, when was the last time they went on strike? The government have lost control. And it's hard. My sister was a nurse and then a domiciliary carer. And the work that they do day in, day out, and then they're having to strike to be paid
a living wage.
And when nurses are going to food banks, we've all heard the stories.
I mean, I get it's partly party political, but it wasn't intended as a party political. I mean, there is a party political angle to it. But just more generally, we as a society, there was a moment when I just thought, we've learnt loads of really useful lessons. We seem to be talking a different language all of a sudden.
There's no doubt about it. Yeah, absolutely.
And second thing, I suppose, which is about politics, is for all these issues, we talked about transport, we talked about social care. Again, do you ever see the prospect of the two parties working together? Because none of these problems, either the environment or the challenge of AI, is going to be fixed in one parliamentary term.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you that there has to be some consensus on those big challenges that face us, and whether that's child sexual exploitation, mm-hmm. whether that's obesity, addiction, whether, like you say, the challenge of AI. I mean, we have to have a more front-footed approach that is for the nation, less of the Punch and Judy.
Mm-hmm. And on that, I just want to talk about your role as a woman in politics. I mean, you talked about the abuse that politicians get, and obviously you came into politics in very tragic circumstances. I mean, what woman in her right mind would want to enter politics, and what could we do to make politics feel more welcoming? Given the levels of abuse, I mean, you just have to look on social media.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's hard to talk about this because, one, if I talk about it, and you will all know that I became an MP after the tragic murder of Joe Cox. But if we focus on this as women MPs, what happens is it becomes the only story to tell, and it becomes a truth that don't go into politics as a woman because it's horrendous. I think that there is an element of resilience you have to develop as well, whether you're going to be whatever your background mm-hmm. as a public servant. And of course, there's no doubt about it that women, people of colour, anybody with a disability in public life will get more abuse. But they're all, you know, the people that do it are idiots. And, you know, they're fools in their mum's back bedroom in their wife fronts eating pot noodles. You know, obviously, if there is a serious threat, it has to be treated seriously. And I'm not undermining the direct, palpable threats colleagues have had. And of course, they must be reported to the police, and those people must pay the price. But it's also about an approach. And I hope that the only time that I think I've won against the trolls was Shouldergate. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah, I do.
Where at this dispatch box where I had a broken ankle and my dress fell off my shoulder. And basically, I was called everything under the sun on social media. I was breastfeeding. I was being taken from behind over a wheelie bin. I was a slag and a slapper and blah, blah. Anyway, it got a bit of heat. I auctioned the dress for £20,200 yeah. for a £35 ASOS dress. And all the money went to the Girl Guides, who do brilliant campaigning for shame for young girls, body shaming. So, you know, sometimes you can pivot it to something positive. But what I don't want to say is politics is terrible for women, don't do it, because I need more women. I'm lonely. We need more women mayors.
But, I mean, to get onto the practical, I mean, we have more metro mayors called Andy than we have female metro mayors, right?
It's true. It's true. Help me, guys. Come on, help me.
So practically, what can be done? I mean, is it all women shortlist for MP candidates? What can be done apart from you saying it's quite good?
Well, yeah. I mean, men need to start voting for women in selections. That's one thing. So if you have a choice of two brilliant candidates who could both do a brilliant job, why not just vote for the woman? If both could do the job, rather than maybe somebody who is maybe your mate. I would say, you know,
I've never voted for a mate in my life.
And also, I think, you know, councillors, women councillors, being able to get support for childcare, for, you know, leadership programmes, mentoring, for being able to have an opportunity to learn what the job is about. Because more often than not, women only apply if they have 100% of all the across all the detail. Men will apply if it's like 60%. So, you know, I admire...
I don't know why you looked at me then.
I admire your confidence. But I do wonder whether, you know, life as an actor, I've always been able to say, yes, I can water ski. Yes, I can ride a horse. Yes, I can ski. And then you learn how to do it afterwards if you get the job. So maybe that has been my approach that's helped me. I would say we absolutely need a sea change, because if we are going to oversee the biggest shift in power from the centre to the regions through mayors, then we can't just shift that power to a load of fellas.
Personally, I think blagging is a very important
blagging
life skill.
Yeah.
But all right, look, we're going to draw to a close, partly because we've got some wine over there and this gives you a chance to have a chat with Tracy afterwards. But this
Great.
Is my best bit. Hang on. We have developed scientifically a quick fire round to find out if our guest is a member of the new elite or not. So we'll
new
run
aliens.
This new elite.
Oh, new elite.
Which is a very fashionable phrase, which you will find on Twitter.
Elite.
So anyway, here are your quick fire questions. Are you ready? BBC or Netflix?
Oh, God, BBC.
All right. Guardian or GB News?
Guardian.
USA or EU?
Oh, God, that's really hard.
That's not an answer.
USA only because of Succession.
Okay. Prince Harry or Piers Morgan?
Oh, Harry all the way.
All right. Greggs or Pret?
Pret, sorry. I know. Greggs, if there's a Greggs. Pret, because I want a soup.
No, you can't. You've just got to say
okay,
Pret.
Yeah.
The number of people in London, incidentally, who thought Greggs had just been invented 3 years ago is quite...
Yeah,
anyway,
it's
yeah.
At Westminster.
Oh, have you
yeah.
seen this new thing called Greggs? Like, yeah. What? Hotel or Airbnb?
Oh, Airbnb.
Tofu or sausages?
Vegan family tofu.
Oh. Levelling up or cutting taxes?
Levelling up!
Bike or car?
Bike.
EV or SUV?
EV.
Beer or wine?
Oh, wine. No, beer. No, yeah, beer.
You could, oh.
No, wine. I tell a lie. Both. I think that's the thing. I'm an alcoholic. My name
if it's,
is
if it's any
I'm
consolation,
alcoholic.
You're being a lot clearer than Tom Tugendhat was, who passed on a couple, I have to say, actually. That just shows the problems he has. But maths or English?
English.
Sciences or humanities?
Humanities.
Football or rugby?
Rugby.
Wrong. Twitter or TikTok?
Twitter.
Cash or contactless?
Contactless.
LTNs, yes or no? Yes or no?
Yes.
Pounds and ounces or grams and
Sorry?
Kilos? Pounds and ounces or grams and kilos?
Pounds and ounces.
Oh, blimey.
I'm that old.
On set or in Parliament?
On set or in Parliament? In Parliament. No,
Perfect.
I'm on set here, look. I'm on set.
Tracy, thank you so
it's
much.
It's been a pleasure.
It was lovely. Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
We can now get a drink.
Thank you.